This episode of Open Mind is brought to you in association with very.co.uk. Do you wish you could find a home for everything in your home? From the bedroom to the bathroom, living room to the garden, Very has all kinds of space-saving sets and storage essentials to keep everything neat and tidy. From sideboards to side tables, cabinets to cupboards, it's easy to create a stylish space in your place with Very. It's time to live well, sleep well, eat well, and spend well at very.co.uk. So, welcome Laura Whitmore to Open Mind today. TV presenter and actress now, Laura.
Sure. Why not? Do a couple of things. I remember talking to you about this before. People like to put you in a box to do one thing. So as soon as you go out of one box and tick another box as well, it confuses people.
Yeah, I was going to say that to you because I remember you saying there was like that thing of people say, like kind of saying stick to your lane.
Yeah. And
have you found that along the way or has it got a bit easier?
I think it gets a bit easier. I feel the UK is different to the US. In the US, they're a bit more open to you doing different things. And sometimes you have to show people. I always think rather than telling people what you want to do, it's always better to show people. And I think that even worked for since I started out in MTV. I didn't really have any experience. I won a competition to be an MTV presenter. And suddenly I'm interviewing, you know, people like Coldplay or The Saturdays. And I'm like, I have no experience. So the best thing to do is to show people. But it does confuse people. I remember when I went and did a play for 6 months. And one of the bosses at MTV went, so what, are you an actor now? What's that about? Like, made some comment like
really?
That. And I was like, it's not like I've suddenly gone into, you know, becoming a doctor. It's still storytelling. It's still, it might be a little bit off the lane, but it's, you know, it's not that far away from the main road. So it confuses people. But I think you also have to reach a stage in your life where you do what's best for you and you have to kind of get rid of the white noise of other people's opinions.
I think as well, these days, everyone's kind of, you know, I kind of find when I'm filling out a form and, you know, when it says occupation, I have no idea what to write.
Do you write something different every time?
Yes. Because I have no idea. And I feel like that's kind of the way the world works now. We all kind of have our fingers in so many different pies and everyone's doing, like, especially in the entertainment industry, it's not as black and white anymore and as straightforward. And you do have to do lots of different things.
I definitely have imposter syndrome. So sometimes when I'm filling out that form, even when I write down different things depending on what form it is. If it's my car insurance, I'm like broadcaster because it sounds a little bit more official than TV presenter or actor. Sometimes when I write things down, I even saying actor, sometimes I just feel, oh God, I shouldn't say that. I don't have enough experience. I haven't showed the world enough what I can do to have the privilege of writing that down on a piece of paper. It is weird. I do get a bit funny about what I write. And also I call it the slasher effect. So am I a slasher? Am I a presenter / DJ / broadcaster / actor? And then as soon as how many slashes can I have before it's unacceptable?
Yeah, that's so, I'm so glad it's not just me then, because I would have thought you would just put TV presenter. Like, I know you have loads of other things, but that would be your go-to. And like, mine still naturally is singer, and I'm like, but I'm not really anymore.
It's just because that's what you're used to putting down for so long, and then sometimes you have to go, but yeah, I mix it up. I say different things depending on what form I'm filling in, depending on what mood I'm in, and what job I'm happening to do that week, like.
Yeah, I suppose so. And did you always know you wanted to be a TV presenter then? Because I didn't realise that you got into it in a competition.
Yeah, my background, I studied drama and I studied journalism. So I always was a little bit obsessed with storytelling in some form and talking to people. I never wanted to sit at a desk. I grew up with just my mom in a small town in Ireland, and Mom knew, she always said from a young age, I would never be able to, I can't sit still. So I'd never be good at just sitting down in front of a computer because I was always like on the go or moving around. I loved performing. And I think I grew up with just my mom, and I have two half brothers, but they're a lot younger than me. So I kind of grew up being an only child, and my kind of go-to and my escapism and my little world was in my room watching television or putting on little plays and little performances to keep myself occupied. And I even remember I had this karaoke machine I got for Christmas that instead of using it for karaoke, I used it to make a radio show. So my friend would come over and we'd just record this really bad radio show. We'd do the weather and everything. And that was like a really early memory I have of keeping myself occupied by telling these little stories.
I feel like a lot of us used to do it, like, cause I used to do it with my sister, because you could press record, couldn't you, on a tape player?
Yeah, and
you
could rewind it and listen back.
Yeah, and we always used to do that as well, because you could also record music off of the radio, so you could like, and the next song is, and
yes. Oh, but I remember listening to my local radio station, because rather than having to go and pay for the cassette tape, I just used to record the song.
But yeah,
we lived in an age where you just had to listen to the radio until your song came on. I remember like Spice Girls Wannabe, and just like holding my finger over the record button, waiting for the song to come on so I could record it and then put it on my radio show.
So as a child, would you say you were quite confident then, if you were into performing?
Strangely, I wasn't. It was my little escapism. I remember when I was probably about 5 or 6, my mom said that the teacher called her in to say that I wasn't really speaking in class, that I was really shy. Mm-hmm. And just that, not that she was worried about me, but just that she was watching it. And my mom sent me off for drama lessons, and she said that was the day it all changed. And
I came
I came home with like a hand on my hip and I had attitude. She was like, what have I created?
Oh, I love that.
But yeah, I guess because I spend a lot of time by myself in my room, probably like a lot of kids. But yeah, I just found the little ways of keeping myself busy and occupied. And I always say when I started doing drama class and drama lessons, and similar when I went to university and I lived away from home when I was 17, and I didn't really know anyone in my university, I joined the drama society, and it's always like how I found my people. Also, similarly, when I went and did a semester abroad in Boston in my final year, the fourth year of my degree, I again kind of felt, oh God, here I am in Boston. And like all the Americans seemed so cool and trendy. And here's this girl from Ireland. And I joined the drama group, and I auditioned for a play and got into a play. And I was like, I found my people. So it didn't matter where I was in the world, when I kind of found that drama group, or maybe just like a group of loners who their escapism was through, I don't know, performance, or I don't know, had these egos that needed to be massaged and somehow. Once I found them, I was like, oh, these are my people.
So it's funny that you feel like you kind of still have this imposter syndrome, when actually it's something you've been doing for years. It's not like you turned around yesterday and went, oh, I'm going to do acting now. You've been doing that since you were so young.
Oh, well, I think faking it till you make it. I feel like I've always been acting, pretending that I knew what I was doing. I still remember the first day of my job for MTV, and I moved to London. I had to find a place to live in London, and London's so expensive. I remember just even trying to be able to find anywhere that I could afford to live, because I got this great job and it looked glamorous from the outside, but I still had to pay a month's deposit, rent, we didn't have the glamour. I know behind the scenes there wasn't hair and makeup and there wasn't styling, and you're on television every day trying to keep up and trying to look like you belong there, even though I definitely felt like I didn't. And then I went to LA on my first day, and I had to interview like the Pussycat Dolls. And the first interview I ever did was Coldplay with Chris Martin. And I like doing my own hair and makeup. And I remember just being like, just pretend you should be here, because no one knows you shouldn't be here. So just pretend. And I think I've kind of kept that mentality even now, even when I'm doing different things, even when I'm on radio, if I'm filming something, if I'm on TV, or whether it's acting or presenting, I'm still just pretending I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
And how was it then for you coming, you know, moving from Ireland, just being you and your mum, and then moving to London? That must have been terrifying.
Mad. It was mad. It probably should have been more terrifying than it was. Sometimes I don't know, when you're in something, you don't really realize, because you're too busy living it, which is nice. And it was busy and it was fast paced, and I was filming every day, and I was just trying to survive each day. So I wasn't really thinking too much, which is
so how old were you?
So I won the competition when I was 22, and I'm really happy I was that age, because I don't know about you, because I know you were very young when you started out. I felt because I was a little bit older and I had these 4 years at university, not necessarily I studied broadcast journalism, but not necessarily that I shouldn't say this, but not necessarily the classes helped me, but the growing up of living away from home for those few years,
yeah,
being away from being in the media, I didn't have to deal with any of that stuff. I had my first boyfriend, my first proper boyfriend, and my first proper breakup. So I felt like even at 22, I had this life that I'd lived, and I had mm-hmm. been hurt before, and I'd gone through all the stuff before. I had to deal with that on a different level.
Yeah. And what made you go for this competition then? What did you have to do?
So I remember, so I was back in Ireland, and I was in my final year of university, but I was interning in this radio station, and they just offered me a permanent job. So I was working in a newsroom that was a high stress, I'd say, and I was like the new kind of young intern, so people didn't really talk to you. I was probably way too enthusiastic for them. Like, hey, guys, can I help you? And they're just like ignoring me and sending me off to do like really boring jobs. But I remember I just had gone through a breakup with like my first boyfriend, and I was home one night, and I had MTV on, and an MTV News came on, and this little bulletin flashed up and said, we're looking for a new face of MTV Europe. And I remember years ago, I don't know if you remember, they used to do shows like that all the time called like Is She MTV? I remember they did one Richard Blackwood hosted, and there was one around the time of Edith Bowman and Davina.
Yeah.
But I hadn't really done a show like that in years, and there wasn't really these opportunities. And I come from a background where no one in my family is in this line of work at all. Like, my mom is a single parent who is a civil servant, worked for the Department of the Environment. My dad, who I have a great relationship with but I didn't grow up in his house, he worked in finance and property. So I just didn't come from this. So I thought the only way of getting into it is to get a contact somehow. And yeah, so I had this email address because it said to send a little video off, and I had this email address, and I'm like, yes, I've got an email address. So that's half the battle.
What did you have to do?
So I sent I had to record a 2-minute news bulletin that I just made up myself. And I didn't have, this wasn't the age of smartphones where we just had cameras on our phone. I had to borrow a camera from my university.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I know. Like, it was so easy to make videos now, but then it wasn't. So we recorded a video. My mate, John, very kindly recorded it, and we put it on like a DVD, an actual physical DVD, and sent it off. And also it was through MySpace as well, so I had to upload it onto MySpace and send it to them. And I got a call about 2 months later saying that they had 3,000 people enter it, and I was down to the last 150. And then,
oh my goodness,
that's the shit, that's what I ended up winning, and I won the contract.
That's nuts. Mad. I love that. It's so old school though, as
it's
well.
It's so old school. But even to this day, I get a lot of people messaging me who want to get into television. And I think it's different. The opportunities have changed. It's very hard to kind of get that initial step up, especially if you don't come from it and you're not connected to anybody. And we're really lucky now. We can make our own content with YouTube and things like that. But it's very hard to kind of get directly into television, and that was such a great opportunity, and I feel so blessed that I took it, because my mom used to always say, like, if you're not in it, you can't win it. So, you know, sometimes you're at home going, oh, I haven't won the lotto. I'm like, well, have you bought a lotto ticket? It's the same thing with anything in your life. If you haven't put yourself out there, it's not going to come knocking on the door. You have to break the door down yourself.
And what do you think then attracted you to acting? Do you think it's like escapism, or getting to be someone else, or?
Yeah, probably an element of escapism, probably ego involved as well. I think anyone who's in this industry has to have some sort of ego.
Yeah.
But, or want to belong, or want to be loved. I don't know. Probably goes back to something really deep. But when I was younger, just my best memories were, I had two older cousins who are like my big sisters, because I never had older sisters. And I have these two cousins, and I remember when I was a kid going to see them do plays and stuff, and we used to kind of put on little performances at Christmas, and that was my happy place. And that was a way of you're still yourself, but you can kind of experiment with other elements of your personality. And again, when I was a shy child, I could go into drama and play a character and be this really confident person, and there's definitely elements I could play on that. And you have to be, that's the one thing I've kind of learned through the last few years when I've been doing a little bit more acting, and I went back and I studied acting, was trying to not let too much of your personal stuff get in, because I found sometimes I'd be playing a character and I'd let Laura's personal life get too into it, and it's trying to differentiate between the two of them, because otherwise it can be a lot to work through.
Yeah, I went to New York and I did like a 2-week intense course. Yeah, and I remember them saying the same thing, because I'd always only ever heard of like method acting, where people use from their own experiences, and they were like, you'll just drain yourself from doing that, like having to go in and say, if you're a character that's crying every day and really unhappy, if you're having to pull from those things like every day, it can be too much. And I'd never really thought of it like that.
Yeah, so. I remember doing a show, and we were doing like 8 shows a week, and it was a UK tour, and my character's like one of her closest friends is murdered, and there's a scene, and like every night you have to kind of end up in tears and kind of get to that stage. But in real life, in Laura's life, I had found out the day before that a girl who was younger than me, who I was working with, had passed away. And it was only when I was on stage and I said a line, and I realized that the name was the same name as the girl. It just didn't resonate until I was on stage. And the tears came, and I couldn't stop them. And then it goes into the interval, and I was really worried about doing the second half of the show because I'd let myself get involved too much.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So
it was really hard to, because at the time I'm like, oh, I can use these emotions. And then I thought, oh no, this is a dangerous game because I can't stop them now.
Yeah. Oh God, I can imagine. That's so weird how you didn't put two and two together until you're out there.
I was on stage and I had to say the name was Sophie, and until I had to say Sophie, and I just something clicked, and I just was like, oh shit.
I think for you, like you said, it was kind of this imposter syndrome and people thinking you've got to stay in your lane. Yeah. With going into acting and being a presenter, that's what everyone knew you for.
Yeah.
Have you felt a lot of pressure over the years of being in the public eye? Obviously, kind of coming from being in Ireland, then coming over to London, being thrown into being this new MTV presenter, and then you've kind of grown from there. Have you ever felt those pressures?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressures. I think I was lucky when I started in MTV, because I felt it was, although it was a competition, it was very under the radar, and I had a chance to grow. I had a chance to get better. I had a chance to learn, and I learned a lot about being a presenter by doing. And I think, like I said before, you have to show people. It goes similar to, you have to do it to learn how to do it, because you can only learn so much from people telling you. You just have to do it. And the more I interviewed, the more people I met, the more I realized that everyone's just a person. I remember interviewing everyone from like Jennifer Lopez to P. Diddy to Britney Spears, and I just remember going, like you're just normal, like as normal as you can be for the weird environment that you're in. But I would interview people and I'd be nervous going into the room, and then I realized that they'd be a little bit nervous because I'm the one asking the questions. And that's when I realized, we're all kind of just making this up as we go along, which it was such an epiphany when that happened, and it made it easier going forward.
And I feel like, you know, as women, there's often a lot of pressure and a lot of judgment on the way that we look. And, you know, you're known for like your style and beautiful, obviously. Do you ever find that difficult, or have you found that difficult over the years?
I got pissed off because everything I did in the papers, and I think I'm right in saying that women get this more than men. How you're defined is what you're wearing or who you're going out with. And I remember there was one article in a publication where I think there was 5 different people mentioned. Mm-hmm. And everyone was mentioned. All the men were defined by what they did, and all the women were defined by who they went out with or how they looked.
I really.
So I think, I'm trying to think who was on that list, but say they'd say something like sports presenter Ore Aduba, and then they said George Clooney's former love Lisa Snowden, and everyone, like, and I just looked through it all, I'm like, oh my god, like that's crazy. And I remember actually just saying it to the publication. I remember putting it up on Twitter, and which is the one positive with Twitter. Sometimes you can get something out there straight away. And they changed it, because I honestly don't think they did it intentionally. I think we're just so used to defining women by who they're going out with or how they look that they just didn't realize that they were doing that. But I did notice when I'd interview people, it would be talking about, yeah, people are interested in your love life or how you look more so than actually here's a girl who has worked her ass off, who kind of came from the small town single parent in Ireland and is trying to make a career for herself and is working hard along the way. And I did, it did get to me a little bit because I felt a bit demeaned. And obviously it's personal for me, so you feel it more. Other people probably didn't notice it, but it really got to me.
I think I find that a lot. That's kind of the thing that people are more interested in, or so I've noticed it more since I did the book. So articles would come out and it would then end up mainly being about Wayne or Wayne's past or and things like that. And you definitely, and it being in the Saturdays, obviously in a girl band, that's kind of your main role anyway, but it was always what you're wearing and who you're with. And I'd never experienced that before. And it does get a bit frustrating. And you're right, it completely happens more to women than it does to men.
Yeah. And then you kind of get to a stage where you have to try and take control back, because you don't really have control over what people write about you or say about you. And I kind of thought, if I do a certain type of job, is that, like when I did Strictly, and I know you did Strictly as well, and I love that show so much, and I love dancing, and I love the actual show element of it, but everything, the circus around it, I found really hard to deal with. And I kind of had to think, do I want to put myself up for doing a show like that? Because a lot of people said, well, it comes with the territory, you know, you've got paps outside your house, you've got articles written about you constantly, every little thing you say, any person you talk to. And I remember going, why am I putting myself up for this? Because this isn't about dancing at all.
No, it's not.
It's not. And I found that really, really eye-opening, and looking at little triggers that don't work for me. And that's why with other jobs that have kind of come since then, I'm like, well, I love the show, but I don't want to deal with that shit. And maybe we get to a stage where we can kind of do the show without the shit, but it is tough.
This episode of Open Mind is brought to you in association with very.co.uk. Relaxation is really good for you. For a start, it can help to lower blood pressure and improve concentration and mood. So the more you chill, the better you feel. Which gives you a great excuse to check out Very's range of products designed to help you unwind, including night body butter, bath soaks, scented candles, and cozy jumpsuits. It's time to live well, sleep well, eat well, and spend well at very.co.uk. You know, when Love Island, when that came up for you, was that quite a hard decision for you to make?
Yeah, it was such a weird one, because there's so many emotions going on. Yeah. And I love that show, and I think it's a great show. I kind of wish now, when we're all in lockdown, I could be watching that show, because it's such a great escapism. And so I might go back and watch some of the older series. But I love that show, and it was such a weird situation to find yourself in, getting a job like that, but in those circumstances. And a part of me was like, I don't know if I want this. I want to do the show. I think I'm good at live telly, and I enjoy the show, but do I want the shit show that goes with it? And I'd seen people have to go through it before, and I didn't know if I wanted to put myself up for that. I'm also very aware that Ian, my other half, is connected to the show. I mean, we don't actually technically work together because we do different jobs, but it's the same show. So is that opening up my personal life for everyone's entertainment, because they feel that they can? Because, you know, a journalist thinks because you put a picture up on Instagram that she can talk about you. Does that mean if we're doing a show together, then definitely, you know, there's nothing that you can't talk about. So there's lots of things like that I had to really think about. And that was only from having 10 years in the industry where I've had to deal with it.
Yeah, I did wonder if the fact that Ian was on the show would kind of make you, because I think it would make me kind of second guess myself. Yeah. It's no different to someone working in an office and then you going, oh, should I go and work in that same office?
The same environment. And it was really important that I talked to Ian about it as well, because I got offered the job and before Ian knew. Obviously, we live in the same house, so he knew quite quickly. But it was really important because that's, you know, his show. I know a lot of people who work on the show because I've worked on the Brits and BAFTAs and I'm a Celeb and even MTV Days. There's a lot of similar crew, but that was his thing. So it's like, how would I feel if he suddenly was doing a radio show on the same station that I do? Do you know, like, just stuff like that. And a lot of people thought, oh, well, of course you're going to jump on it because he works on it. But if anything, it kind of made us go, oh God, maybe we have to think this. But the one thing that kind of helped me with the decision was, if I wasn't going out with him, I would do it. So why would it stop me? Because I am going out with him.
And also, I suppose, did you find the pressure because the show was already massive? Like, I feel like if a show was new and also you're not stepping into someone else's shoes, it would be easier to make that choice.
Yeah, again, I would always love to kind of do a new show where you can build a format and kind of work from the ground upwards. Because a lot of things, even with MTV and things like that, you're kind of stepping into like people who've done the show before. When I did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, Caroline had obviously hosted that show before, and Emma Willis. So you're always kind of, but then the thing is, if you look at most TV shows, they're a format of another show. So everyone, like Emma taking over from Davina doing Big Brother, and even Emma taking over from Holly doing The Voice. And if you kind of think that way, there are probably no exactly new shows. Everything's based on a dating show or based on a different type of reality show or entertainment show or challenge show. So you kind of have to just make it your own as much as possible. That's all you can do. And everyone's different. As soon as you do a show, it's your own stamp on it. It was when it was the winter show, it was nice that it was a different location, that it felt fresh and new. So everyone was kind of learning new things.
Yeah, I suppose so.
It still takes a while to kind of work out what's the best thing for you. And all you can think about is the best thing for you and what you think is right at that time.
Yeah. And I think it was one of those situations, it was so publicized and everyone was talking about it. So it was just even worse for you. I feel like it's that thing of people's opinion of it. Like, does it look like you're just jumping in into a bad situation, like, you know, taking a bad situation with someone else and making it good for you?
I've had every single comment that you can, like, from the extremes, from all spectrums, going, I can't believe you've stolen someone's job. And like that, for me, I couldn't think of anything worse. And it's such a horrible thing for someone to say, because it was a situation that I didn't particularly want, and I came into later. And it's so surreal. The whole thing is surreal that you're still kind of navigating through it. And the one thing that I've always said from the start, when I got offered the job, when I had the first call before I even met anybody, was, I just need to speak to Caroline. I want to talk to Caroline, because I also didn't know what the story is, because I try not to read newspapers, but from being online, from news feeds, you pick up things. So I didn't know what was true and what wasn't true. So I wanted to find that out without everyone else's opinion kind of coming on top, so I could make a clear decision for myself.
Yeah, so you guys made it together. She spoke to you, and you've said that before.
Yeah, and it was really lovely, because again, I didn't want to get too involved with what was going on in Caroline's life, to do with any court case or anything, because that's none of my business. It's none of my business. It's none of anyone's business, bar the people who are involved in it. I didn't want to ask her too many questions, but I wanted to make sure she was okay. And she actually messaged me first, saying, because she knew that she was stepping down from that series, and someone had to do it. And she just messaged me saying, I hope it's you that does it. And I was like, oh, it was just so nice to get that message, because I didn't have the job at that stage. I just had, you know, phone calls and meetings. But I said, look, they've called me, but I don't know yet. I don't even know how I feel. And no decision will be made before telling you, because I feel like she deserved that respect, and she deserved that because she had created it.
Yeah, I just remember seeing it all, and I did really feel for you, because I know what people are like, and I knew what people would say. And I just thought, it's a really difficult position. In some people's eyes, it's like, well, of course she'll do it. It's an amazing show. It's massive. She's going to want to do it, you know, and all of that. And then also there is that thing, is she is your friend. It was a horrible situation. It wasn't like she had stepped down because she was done and ready to move on to something else. And so I really felt for you with that. And it's nice that she reached out to you and you know, and it goes against what everyone wants to write about, you know, like women rivalry.
Yeah,
like, no, some women can support other women. And I think that just doesn't make as good a story.
Yeah. And, you know, there's like in everyone's life, they've ups and downs. And Caroline went through some like times that I can't even imagine. And it was just, I feel blessed that, you know, the last time I've talked to her was so positive. And she, and this is the sad thing, because she, this, you have to be really careful with friends, because they look like they're fine. And I haven't even said this to anyone, but one of the last things she said to me was, actually, this is probably a good thing what's happening now, because I have a lot of things that I need to deal with and that I want to work through. And I remember thinking, oh, this is like, I remember just thinking, oh, she's gonna come out of this and she's gonna come back with a bang, and it's gonna be, and we've seen people do that before, and I just feel, maybe again I was just being naive, but I really did not see it going the other way at all.
No, I think I was the same. You know, I did Strictly with her.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna sit here and say we were like best friends, but she's on our group chat, and that chat still, there's always a conversation every day. Yeah. And I did the same. I didn't message her about it all, because I just thought that's what everyone's gonna be doing. Everyone's reading stuff. Everyone has an opinion. Yeah, and she's dealing with it. But I was on this morning talking about the book, and she texted me and said, just watched one this morning, it was great. And I was like, oh, thank you. I was like, look, I haven't been in touch because I didn't want to put you in an awkward position. Yeah. Hope you're okay. And she said, you've really inspired me today.
Oh.
So for me, I was like, oh, like, she's doing okay. It seemed positive. Yeah. So I was gutted. But I, like you, I was glad that when I had spoken to her, it was positive. It was a nice conversation.
Yeah.
But it just shocked me. And I think that's a prime example of, you don't know what people are going through. Not one person can be to blame. And we'll
never know the reasons.
No, exactly.
You'll never know what was going on in someone's head. And also, Caroline was dealing with a lot, and there's a lot of stuff that she was dealing with that maybe not everyone knows about. And there's a lot of things that she had to sort out. And there's only so much that we can think about and talk about without knowing the actual situation. It's just, I don't know. I still don't think my brain hasn't computed.
No, me neither. Situation. Exactly the same. And how will it be for you? I don't know if you obviously know if you're going back to Love Island or not, but do you think it's going to be quite difficult for everyone, I imagine?
Yeah, the decision was made after the series to just not talk about any further series for, like, I think everyone who worked on that show, most people knew Caroline. And I think a lot of people took a month off. And it was only last month that we were on air. So everyone kind of had a month off to themselves and before thinking. And it's really weird because there's so much ups and downs, and obviously the downs have been horrific. And I do have to also mention that there were some wonderful times working on that show and this series. I love that show, and that show, the people in that show, the people who work on that show, oh, they're just like the loveliest people in the world, and they really helped me get through a really tough time. And I remember even I had to chat to all the Islanders before we did the final live show, and I remember just thanking them. I said, thank you, because you've really helped me through the last few weeks coming into the villa. And everyone, and there were such a good bunch. I can't speak for other Islanders, I just know the ones I worked with.
Yeah.
And they were just so lovely, and even the little dramas that would happen in there, it was just really helped so many people get through a really tough time. So I think afterwards we just wanted to reflect on the good times. And I did that show, and there were some lovely moments. And I really appreciate the people at home as well, and the messages I got, especially after the live final. Again, talking that moment of live television, because as much as you can do a record, when you do something live, like, you don't know what way it's going to happen. You don't know how you're going to feel in the moment. And it's scary sometimes. And it was different because it wasn't like adrenaline and butterflies. It was a different kind of scary. So I just wanted to kind of time away from the show before making any decisions going forward. And I think the show was always going to be a little bit later for the summer series because the fact that they did a winter series. But then, of course, the coronavirus happened.
I know, I was going to say. So now
you've got
the perfect
decision
excuse.
Yet at all.
And have you found, like, how are you finding all this isolation stuff? Like, I'm so jealous that you've got Mick.
Oh my God, dog. Mick, my little dog. I'm going to put it out there and say, I'm not hating it. I kind of could have done with the time, the downtime. I've really enjoyed it. It's been so lovely just being at home because I kind of felt my house was where my stuff was, not necessarily that I live there. So being at home and cooking dinners and like, this sounds mad, but like one of the things that someone said, what do you and Ian like to do on your days off? We used to love going shopping, like going to the local supermarket and go shopping with the trolley. And we'd see all these other couples having fights together. And we were like, oh my God, this is like real life. I love it. Because our real life wasn't like that. It was so, we spent so much time away from each other, or he'd be doing gigs at nighttime because he does a lot of stand up and he's supposed to be on tour at the moment. And I could be doing radio in the morning. I could be doing shoots during the day. I could be doing castings at like mad times. And it was the first time we were just at home together. And yeah, as I said, I'm not hating it.
What I think is nice about it is that everyone is doing the same thing. So yeah. You don't really feel like you're missing out either.
No, you know? No FOMO. Terrible FOMO. Especially like when I first moved to London, I love going to gigs. There's always gigs on. And I realized there's always some incredible artists playing most nights. And from working in with BBC and MTV, you'd get a lot of invites to gigs. And I used to hate not going because I'd get FOMO. And I'm actually quite relieved that nothing's on because I can just stay at home.
I feel like we're all going to emerge out of this very different. Like, obviously, it's going to be horrendous for a lot of people because we are losing a lot of people, and I feel like we've still got a long way to go with that.
I am very fortunate that it hasn't really hit me hard because I don't know anyone close to me that is suffering with the virus or is critically ill. I think for a lot of people that's very real.
Yeah, but I think the world is going to come out of it quite different. I think we're going to become more aware of the way we live our lives. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I also think there's going to be a lot of people that come out of this with a lot of OCD issues about germs and cleanliness and people being too close to them.
Probably no harm. No. Probably no harm, a little bit of that. And there's definitely going to be a lot of people probably coming out of this pregnant.
I know, I said that. Divorced or pregnant.
Divorced or pregnant, one or the other. I hope we come out of this a little bit nicer. And there's that lovely video that went viral on the news of, you know, this is the time that kids will remember, like, oh, this is the time mommy and daddy were at home together.
Yeah.
And played with us.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's funny. And how do you find it? Have you had any anxiety with it? Like, what's your way of dealing with your mental health, especially in, you know, now that you're kind of stuck at home?
I actually feel a bit more relieved at home, and I definitely had noticed I'd had little panic attacks, not severe ones, but different times in my life with dealing with things. And I noticed a trigger. It's noticing the triggers, what triggers it, what doesn't trigger, and trying to remove yourself from them. But even I think it was a few weeks ago, and I wasn't feeling that well, but it was the day after Caroline's funeral, and I just felt exhausted, and I felt it was the first time I had let myself fully get upset, because I felt the whole time I had to keep it together, and I just felt exhausted, and I had to go into BBC to do an interview. And then we hadn't reached the height of COVID-19 where we knew exactly all the symptoms, but people were saying, if you're not feeling well, stay at home. And I remember getting on the tube and then thinking, oh, am I sick or am I just tired? And it wasn't about me being sick. It was about infecting other people. So I remember like being on the tube, like trying to stand like 10 meters away from everybody and almost having a panic attack. And I remember like ringing Ian, and he actually didn't really help me in the situation because he was having his own little like freak out about everything. And so I was like, I'm not going to talk to him right now because he's going to make me feel more panicked. And I was also on the tube, so I couldn't get off. And I was like, am I sick or am I just tired or what's going on? I think everything had built up to what was going on with me personally, to what was going on in the wider world. And it was the first time I'd properly listened to the news that week because I'd been in a bubble of what was going on in my personal life and losing Caroline and stuff. So I just had this freak out going, germs, people are near me. And I paced around BBC for about 20 minutes before I went in because I didn't know if I should have gone in or not. And it was just a really weird moment. And I think after that day, I didn't really go out again.
So what would your tip be then for other people? Because I feel like you're very good at putting yourself in situations that you're nervous about or uncomfortable with. Like, what would your tip be for other people in that situation?
I think we have one life. That is all we have. And we need to live it to, it sounds so cheesy, but we just need to live it to, you know, the best that we can. It's full potential. And there are so many opportunities that we get. I think if you get an opportunity, take it. If it's something that you're kind of interested in, take it. It's going to be scary, but if we just do the same thing all the time. And I think being at home now, we realize how mundane it can be to do the same thing all the time. So I think hopefully this will make more people kind of jump at opportunities more. But my thing is, like, feel like, oh my god, that's a book, feel the fear and do it anyway. But I'm just gonna name every self-help book I've ever read, but it's be open. But it's really important to just to live. And I think everything that's happened in the past while, you realize that once this world is over, whatever you believe in afterwards and afterlife, like, you've lived this life and you can't go back and do it again. So just take those opportunities. And when sometimes I get offered jobs, like, my agent sometimes asks me, oh, would you be interested in doing this? Or would you definitely say no to doing this? Or and sometimes, like, would you do this film or would you do this kind of thing? I'm like, do you know what? Each opportunity is different. And I'd never say completely no to, you know, one particular genre. I'm just going to see if it's something I'm interested in. And mm-hmm. if it is, I'm going to do it. And even if it makes me a little bit scared. And I've done things and kind of gone, God, I wish I didn't do that. But you know what? Those regrets, they're not the worst in the world, because you're like, now I've learned something about myself from doing that. Or I've grown in some way. So I don't necessarily regret doing them. I've learned from them. So nothing I can do. What is the risk? The risk is what you maybe didn't enjoy it as much as you thought you would. Or maybe you weren't as good, or maybe you were better than you thought you were going to be. So everything that you do, you're going to learn from. So my tip is just to go for it. And yeah, feel the butterflies, feel the adrenaline, and just live, because feeling all those emotions remind you that you're alive.
Ah, thank you. Well, I think I needed to hear that.
I'm there for ages. I don't know what I was saying, but I hope that makes sense.
No, it did. It's great. Definitely from speaking to you, I've kind of realized that you do, even if you're scared of something, you put yourself in situations and you just go for it. And yeah. I think sometimes we're all very good at talking ourselves out of things, telling ourselves we're not good at something. And actually, you just need to give something a go and see what happens. So I like that. So thank you.
And thank you. I read your book, and I found it really, really helpful. And especially just connecting with other people's stories. Because again, when I meet a lot of people, especially in my industry, everyone seems like perfect. And and knowing that people have their ups and their downs. I know it sounds terrible because I don't want to get pleasure out of people's downs, but it makes me go, oh, they're real. They're like me. They feel it too.
Yeah. And that's what it's all about. So that's fine. You're welcome. Well, thanks, babe. Well, good luck. Hopefully you and Ian will still like each other by the end of it, like everyone else.
I hope so. We'll see how
I'm sure you will. All right. Thanks, babe.
Love, babe. Bye.
Open Mind, the podcast, is sponsored by very.co.uk.